Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. And I see, sitting across from me, as he typically is, I think... I can't tell. I don't have my glasses on, but I think it's senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
She'll be the same, except for bionic eyes. She lost the real ones in the robot wars.
Nice.
Thank you. Yeah, today we're going to talk about laser eye surgery. We've had some people ask us about laser eye surgery and what goes into it and exactly how are lasers used in the process.
Well, I think that's a record for your use of that version of lasers.
Yeah. And so we're going to kind of break it down and talk about what goes into a laser eye surgery procedure. And we should also mention, I should mention that I am very close to someone who has had laser eye surgery. Not right now, not like physically.
Yeah, but, I was going to say.
My wife had laser eye surgery. She has been very happily moving around without the need for glasses for several years now. And it was very impressive to me because my wife is not the sort of person who typically likes people,
messing with their eyeballs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not high on her list of things to do today, but she did it anyway. And, we're going to kind of talk about the process and what you have to do in order to get laser eye surgery and what's actually being done to you.
Yeah, and I think probably the best place to start is, speaking of eyeballs, with the eyeball itself.
Yeah.
And why you might need laser eye surgery in the first place.
Right. To understand this discussion, you have to have at least a basic geography of the eyeball. So let's talk a little bit about the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Your eye, the outer coating is this sort of tough outer coating called the sclera.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what keeps the eyeball in its shape. It's kind of the outer layer. And then part of this outer layer, about, I think, 1/6 of it, is the cornea,
mm-hmm.
which is the clear outer layer that goes over the part of your eye where light actually passes through to get to, you know, your eyeball.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the cornea is, it's kind of like a window in a way, or if you want to think of it like a tablet device or something, it's the Gorilla Glass that's on the outside that protects the innards. And then behind the cornea, well, first of all, you got this sort of a watery, clear liquid called the aqueous humor. Yeah, this goes back to the old humors idea that dates back centuries, where we used to think that our bodies were governed by a small group of various liquids called humors.
Yes.
We've somewhat developed beyond that at this point.
Although I do think it's funny that even now we are referring to this particular liquid as a humor.
Yes. So the aqueous humor, it's this clear liquid that's behind the cornea. It's also in front of the iris, and there's a little bit behind the iris as well. So then that leads to the question, what then is the iris? Well, that's the color part of your eye. So, for example, my iris is blue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it lacks a certain amount of pigmentation, which makes it a blue color. My wife's eyes are brown. And this is the part of the eye that acts as like an adjustable diaphragm around the pupil. So the pupil is the dark center of your iris. That's the little opening, actually, that allows light to pass through.
Right. And, of course, that's the part that enlarges or gets smaller depending on the amount of light in the room.
Yeah, it's really an ingenious kind of approach, really. It's the same sort of thing that we do with cameras when we have an aperture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the aperture of a camera, and you may remember this if you listen to our podcast about slow motion. We talked about the aperture quite a bit. That's what allows you to adjust how much light comes in through the camera's lens and hits the sensor. Same sort of idea here. The iris is what will expand or contract around the pupil and thus control the amount of light that comes in. So if you walk into a dark room, then the iris is going to allow more light to pass through. It's going to allow more of the pupil to be exposed so that you get more light so that you can maneuver through, because, you know, you're going to be able to you need to be able to see. If you're in a really bright environment, in order to protect the eye, the diaphragm is going to close around the pupil to restrict the amount of light that comes in.
Right. And, of course, there's more than one analog as far as the eye and a camera.
Sure.
We were talking about cameras not too long ago where we talked about the lens and how light passes through the lens to the film on the other side, or an image sensor in the case of a digital camera.
Sure.
Well, in the eye, you've got the retina.
Yeah.
Which is, if you will, on the back side of the eye, which is what records the image as the light comes through the pupil.
Right. You've got the pupil, that's the aperture. You also have a lens right behind the pupil.
Right.
So the lens is what is focusing that light, directing that light so that it hits the focal point ideally, which is the retina. And the retina contains certain kinds of cells, rod cells and cone cells. These are light sensors, essentially. These cells sense the presence of light and through a chemical reaction send that information to your brain. And then your brain says, hey, I recognize that. That's a puppy. Also, interesting point, if you weren't familiar with this, the image that you see when you're looking at something, when it hits your retina, it's actually inverted.
Mm-hmm. Just as it is in a camera.
But yes, this is the basic part of the eye. Now, what happens when something is just not quite right? For example, Chris, I don't know, are you nearsighted or farsighted?
I am myopic.
I am also myopic. That means we are both nearsighted.
And since we both have our glasses off at the moment, we're both a little blurry.
Yeah. So myopia means that the focal point is hitting it's hitting before it gets to your retina. So inside your eye, there's a, you know, the light is being directed by the lens to your retina. The points of light are all converging, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that point of convergence is the focal point. Now, the focal point for those with myopia is in front of the retina.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hitting the retina just right. So that means that when we start looking around at things tend to be the further away things are, the blurrier they tend to be.
Yes.
Now, this can happen through various irregularities. There could be irregularities in the cornea that can cause this to happen, or in the lens itself, or it could be that the eyeball itself is elongated.
Yes.
So that if the eyeball was not elongated, the focal point would be right there on the retina where it's supposed to be and everything would be fine. But the eyeball's been stretched.
Nice sound effect.
Thank you. Doesn't necessarily
Foley by Jonathan Strickland.
Doesn't necessarily mean that someone's actually gone in there and stretched your eyeball. It just means that that's kind of the way it developed. Now, farsightedness, which is
hyperopia.
Hyperopia. Thank you. I'm glad you were ready for that one.
I was ready.
Yeah, hyperopia. You've got the focal point that's actually behind the retina. So when the light's hitting the retina, it's not converged on that point like it should be. And hyperopia, if you're hyperopic, would that be correct?
I think so.
Hyperopic, then that would mean that the closer something is, the more out of focus it is. The further away it is, the clearer it is.
Also, in addition to being myopic, I also have an astigmatism.
I too have an astigmatism.
I think he's just you know, doesn't want me to have one more than he does.
I only have one. Do you have two?
Well, no, I'm saying
are you
I'm both myopic and have an astigmatism.
Okay.
Me too.
It happens to be a fact.
One-upsmanism.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, in an astigmatism, you have a difference in the shape of your cornea or the lens. And basically what happens is it creates, in effect, two focal points within your eye.
Yeah.
And so basically that sort of confuses the way the light is traveling inside your eye. And that you can have, as we were both pointing out just a moment ago, you can have an astigmatism on top of another eye condition.
Yes. Yeah. It's really an uneven curvature of the cornea or lens. And it can cause problems. So the thing is that the humans are clever.
Somewhat.
And we figured out a long time ago that if you use a lens of glass and it's curved just the right way, the curvature of the glass can direct light so that it corrects for these problems. I can't imagine the amount of trial and error it took to be able to figure this out. But to correct your vision, you have to, you know, take into account what the focal point is doing inside your eye. So it's a little bit different between myopia and hyperopia. But anyway, the curvature of the lens depends upon the condition, right? You know, if it's going to be a concave lens for one and a convex lens for the other. And honestly, I can't remember the one from the other. I guess I could stare at my glasses long enough and try and figure it out. But the point being that's what's going to direct the light the right way into your eye so that it corrects for whatever problem you already have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, well, what if we didn't want to wear glasses? What if we wanted something where it wasn't, you know, this pair of frames sitting on our face? Well, that's when we started to come up. Well, we could maybe make a lens that could sit directly on the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And do the same sort of correction.
Yes.
It's going to require a more precise approach because it's going to be a much smaller lens that, by definition, I mean, you can't have an enormous lens shoved into your eye and expect any sort of comfort. So that's where the contact lens idea came from, where we started to kind of get you apply these same kinds of thought to a thin lens that could fit directly on top of the eye. But then we thought, hey, wait a minute. We're really just talking about lenses here. Even the cornea can act somewhat as a lens. The cornea on your eye itself directs light. So what if we were to reshape the cornea so that it corrected for whatever problems we had as far as vision problems are concerned? What if we just did that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then we wouldn't have to wear contact lenses or glasses or anything. And that's where the idea for corrective surgery comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And at its very most basic level, what this laser eye surgery is doing is it's altering the shape of the cornea so that it directs light in a way that corrects for whatever vision problem you have. That's the basic. You know, when you get down to it, that's what laser eye surgery is all about.
Right.
So it's that same principle behind grinding a lens so that you can see, you know, in a pair of eyeglasses, but now it's applied directly to our biology.
Right.
It sadly does not mean you will actually end up with laser shooting out of your eyes.
Well, at least not for most people.
No. I would think that's a pretty rare side effect.
So,
yeah,
where would you like to start with laser eye surgery?
Well, I was going to talk about sort of the process you have to go through before you get laser eye surgery done, and then we'll get into what is actually going on in a laser eye surgery session.
Yeah, because frankly, it reminds me of a lot of life events. You know, the actual event itself doesn't really take all that long. Laser eye surgery only takes a few minutes,
honest. It can take less than half an hour total.
But there is quite a bit of preparation that you need to go through.
Yes.
Beforehand to make sure that everything goes smoothly, and preferably not panicky, which is the reason that I haven't had it done.
Yeah. Yeah, so the first thing you have to do is you have to go through, and we're talking about a reputable laser eye surgeon. This is a good time for us to point out there are a lot of different facilities out there that offer laser eye surgery services. Mm-hmm. Do your research.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Because I know for a fact that there's a few in Atlanta that have a reputation for being less than honest.
Yeah.
Like they do is they'll offer this amazing sounding deal. And of course, we all know the phrase, it sounds too good to be true. It was probably on the internet.
nice.
And the deal would be something like $299 an eye, which is about a tenth of what some eye surgeries cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're thinking, wow, that's amazing. And then, you know, it's got an official sounding name and it's going to be great. And then if you actually start doing some research, you'll see that there's often a lot of bait and switch involved where you'll go in and they'll do this initial eye exam, and then they'll say, oh, well, in your case, because you have this particular, you know, condition or whatever, it's actually going to be closer to $1,500 per eye.
Mm-hmm.
And just that alone is a, you know, first of all, that's kind of a shady business practice. But beyond that, you don't know how far their ethics extend into, say, not being a good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, do your research.
Quack.
Yeah, quack alert. So assuming that the facility has got a good reputation, you go in, you would get a very thorough eye exam, probably more thorough. In fact, I would argue definitely more thorough than you would get going to just get a pair of glasses or contact lenses.
I'm sure. Yes, because they have to be very careful. If you're going to go for LASIK, for example, your eyes have to fall within a certain set of parameters. I mean, they can treat myopia, hyperopia, and astigmatism, but it has to be within a certain range. Now, of course, that's measured in diopters.
Yep. That's kind of the degrees of prescription. So, you know, if you hear someone mm-hmm. say, oh, I've got -3 in this eye and -2.75 in that eye.
They're myopic.
Yeah, they're myopic. Yeah, that a negative number means myopia. A positive number is hyperopia,
mm-hmm.
and then astigmatism can go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now we do have a great article on how LASIK works on the website. And according to the research in there, myopia treatable with LASIK can be from -0.75 to -10.
That's
a big range.
And I should also add that depending on which doctor you go to, they may tell you that if your eyesight falls within, you know, a certain range, like saying, let's say the -0.75 to say -1.5. They might say, you know what, the experience you're going to have, the new vision you're going to have may not be so dramatic as to warrant laser eye surgery. Again, a reputable clinic is going to tell you if the result is going to be truly noticeable or not. For some people, it may not be. Years ago when my wife got it done, I was right there on the border. Like,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I could have gotten it done, but it may not have been that dramatic. And when you're talking about that kind of expense, really, do you want to go in for that? My wife, however, she had gotten to the point of vision where they no longer use the eye chart. They would say, how many fingers am I holding up? So she was an ideal candidate.
Well, you have to hold some up. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, like, whoa, you need some surgery.
Hyperopia that they can treat with LASIK ranges from plus 0.75 to plus 4, and then they can treat astigmatism for plus or minus 0.75 to plus or minus 4.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty decent range of vision that they can correct.
Right.
They also look at the cornea thickness. It has to be 500 microns or greater.
Right. That's we'll explain why the cornea has to be at least that thick coming up, and that's going to be the squiggly, squirmy part where we're both like, okay, so here's what happens next.
I'll be going out for some water.
Chris might go bye-bye for about 5 minutes.
What was that thud?
Yeah. But there are other types of laser eye surgery that you can pursue if your cornea is not of that thickness. If it's, mm-hmm. if it's thinner than that, there are other types of laser eye surgery you can look into, so to speak.
Right. Golly. And then your pupil, should be no, more than 6.5 millimeters in diameter.
Yeah.
Although, you know, there are advances now, that allow you to work with up to 8.5. Also.
So if you're Vin Diesel from, that movie where he's got those huge cornea,
or,
the huge pupils, that just wouldn't work.
Lady Gaga from that one video.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, those folks, I'm sorry. Or practically any Disney character. Because, I mean, have you seen Tangled? That girl's eyes are huge.
Yeah, Sailor Moon's not going to have it done either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and also if you're pregnant, have heart problems, severe heart problems anyway. If you're taking drugs such as medicine for migraines or acne, you have a condition called keratoconus. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it right. I didn't check the pronunciation, but that's a thinning of the cornea condition. And actually, I might not be eligible either, because certain conditions like autoimmune diseases, one of which I have, vascular disease, different kinds of eye diseases and diabetes, all of these things might prevent you from going through with a LASIK procedure.
Hmm.
So these are things that the doctor is going to have to talk to you about.
Yeah.
And I would encourage you to be
honest. Your medical history.
Yeah. You need to be honest too, because, you know, even though you may not want to wear glasses, you know, this is serious business, and you could end up with results that you are not happy with.
There can be complications as well. I mean, even,
yes,
you know, it could be that everything goes well, but you have some complications during the healing process. And if your medical history means that you can't have certain kinds of drugs to help that healing process along, that could be an even bigger problem down the road. So, yeah, it's very important. And then the actual exam, you're going to be looking through lots of different devices that are going to be measuring how your eyes are receiving light. And it's actually technically mapping out your eyes, the inside of your eyes. There's a thing called a corneal topographer.
Yes, that's where they type on your eyes, right?
No, that's a typographer.
Oh.
No,
sorry, I need to put my glasses back on.
Topographer, it actually maps the cornea. So it's looking at the actual shape and thickness of the cornea, and it's to really determine exactly how the light is behaving once it hits that part of your eye.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the pupillometer, which is another device that's looking specifically at your pupil. I mean, there's not a big surprise there, right?
You have a student in your eyeball.
Yeah. And then their software, very powerful software, but working behind the scenes, that's mapping out your eye so that the surgeon is going to know exactly what sort of adjustments they're going to need to make to your cornea in order for it to direct light the way you need it to be, so that you don't have to wear glasses or contact lenses anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty complex stuff. I mean, it's pretty fascinating to see. And also, a laser eye surgery procedure often requires two people,
mm-hmm.
a surgeon and a patient.
Well,
beyond the patient.
Oh.
Two people to actually to do the procedure. The surgeon, and then there's usually an operator who's working on one of the laser machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've talked about the process where, let's say that you've gone through, you've had your eye exam, you've done your medical history, and they've determined you're what is called an ideal candidate. Now, that does not mean you are the perfect person to have had laser eye surgery. It mm-hmm. just means that you fit those parameters, that you don't have anything outlying any of those parameters that would cause concern.
It appears that it'll work out.
Yes. Now is the time where you start to to actually go through the surgery itself. And I think we can walk through the LASIK process, because that's still fairly common. I mean, that's actually probably one of the most common forms of laser eye surgery out there. But we'll also talk about how the other kinds are a little different.
Okay.
So first, when you arrive to get your laser eye surgery done, one thing that happens fairly frequently is that they offer you something to calm your nerves.
Yes.
Because it turns out when a lot of people, when they're thinking they're going to be laying down on the table with someone shooting laser beams into their eyes, they get a little anxious.
I can't imagine why. Actually, that's not the part that makes me anxious, but we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the part immediately before the laser gets shot into your eye.
That would be the part.
Yeah, that's the part where it gets all squirmy.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, basically they're going to set up an appointment when you do your pre-op work. I don't think that they actually would take you back immediately and go, all right, you look good, let's go.
No, no, it's usually a day or two between.
Yeah.
Speaking from my wife's experience.
Yeah.
She went in and had the work that the pre-op work done, and then it was a couple of days later after they had had a chance to really look at the data, and they arranged for the time. And you also have to go there with someone else to drive you home.
Yes, because you will not be able to use your eyeballs.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have some limited eyeball use immediately afterward.
Can't put your weight on them.
Yeah, exactly. Use some eye crutches.
So eye crutches. Are those Apple products?
No, it's not the lowercase I.
Oh.
It's E-Y-E.
I see. So the next thing they're going to do once you're sure you want to go through the process, of course, they also make you sign a waiver saying that you understand that there are things going on where they're going to shoot lasers into your eyeballs, and there are risks involved with that.
Yeah, and part of this depends a lot on your cooperation, like staying still.
And not running from the office screaming.
Yeah.
Again, I'm just imagining what would happen with me. They, assuming your nerves of steel,
are holding,
they will go ahead and put some, topical anesthetic in your eyes.
Yes. So this is to numb your eyes.
Mm-hmm, because they will need to touch them.
Yep. And once that started to take effect, you're led into the operating room where you lay down on a table. It's usually a padded table.
Mm-hmm.
And they position you so that you're going to be under the machine.
Mm-hmm.
That goes ping, and then they have to secure your eyelids so that you're not going to be blinking.
Yes, because you cannot blink.
So they may be using usually a combination of things. There's usually some sort of tape that's safe to put on your eyelids,
mm-hmm,
to keep your eyes open. There's also a device that will sit on top of the bottom part and top part of your eyelids to keep them stationary. This looks a lot like the device that was used in a famous documentary called A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little freaky if you're looking at someone who's getting this done.
The eyelid speculum?
Yeah. Yeah, it's to hold those eyelids in place because, of course, if you blink while the laser's going, it's going to totally mess up the procedure. So they have to stabilize and keep your eyelids from moving. They also put down a ring around your eye that stops you from being able to move your eye around. So you're looking directly up, or directly straight ahead.
Yes.
Straight ahead is the best way of putting it. Not up as in your eyes are turned up, but looking straight forward. It's just because you're laying on your back. It just happens to be up. And then as they the next step is the squiggly part. Are you ready, Chris?
Yes, no, but let's do this anyway.
Okay, so they pull out the microkeratome.
Yes, see, they have to – they're going to put some marks on your cornea.
Yeah.
To identify where
Chris
it is
turning a little green.
Where they're going to use the microkeratome. Basically, when you're dealing with something as sensitive as vision, and you know, the professionals want to do a good job, they're going to want to be as accurate as possible. So they're going to mark your cornea to make sure that they – use the microkeratome, right? I don't even want to talk about it.
So the microkeratome,
I'll be stepping out for a glass of water.
Let's say what it is. It's a surgical instrument. Okay, it's a blade. A very thin blade.
Meep.
And this blade is used to cut a flap in your cornea, which is then pulled back. Whoa. So that the laser can shape the cornea. This is
this is the
entertaining
part
and painful to watch.
This is the part that grosses me out. I'm sorry.
Okay, so yeah, so they're
please,
actually
feel free to laugh.
This, and this is LASIK. There are other versions of laser eye surgery that do not use this, and some of them don't even use a microkeratome blade. They have a special laser that will cut this flap. But in LASIK eye surgery, there is a flap that's cut and pulled back so that the laser can start to shape the cornea without that outer layer in place. And so at this point, the laser, which is called an is an excimer or excimer? E-X-C-I-M-E-R. I actually did not look up the pronunciation.
I haven't seen it.
But this is the laser that does the actual shaping. It starts to vaporize parts of the cornea. And what's doing is it's shooting ultraviolet blasts. The laser is in the ultraviolet range, which means you can't see it. Right, it's outside the range of human sight, and what it's doing is it's exciting the molecules in the cornea to the point where the molecular bonds break down. So it's actually that's what I talk about when vaporizing. It's not heating the eyeball up.
No,
it's
Mr.
actually
Bond,
a cool laser.
I expect you to break down.
And when I mean cool laser, I don't mean that it's like super awesome, although it is. I mean it doesn't heat up the tissue.
Now, you remember earlier I mentioned that your cornea has to be 500 microns or greater when they start this procedure. And that's because when they're done using this laser, there has to be between 250 to 300 microns of thickness once they're done.
Yeah.
So there has to be enough for them to leave the proper amount once they're finished. Otherwise, you can't do this.
So now using this laser to vaporize these molecular bonds and to reshape your cornea, that's essentially the same thing on a grand concept level as grinding a glass's lens so that's going to bend light the right way. It's the same thing as just we're using lasers and your actual eye to do it, which is pretty phenomenally awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's also kind of scary. Now, at the end of it, after it might take, I don't know, 17 to 20 seconds to do this. Chris, you gonna be okay?
Per eye.
Okay, yeah, per eye. They then replace the flap back down on your eye, and it heals. I mean, it sets down in place and is healing as soon as it touches back down.
That is one of the very cool things I think about that.
Yeah.
The doctor will also probably put a little antibiotic on the flap just to make sure that there are no bacteria getting in there.
Yeah, but it immediately starts to heal, which is pretty phenomenal. The whole process only takes, like I said, about 20 seconds per eye. Usually when you're down there, you'll hear people talk about how the doctor told them to look at, say, like a blinking red light.
Mm-hmm.
That red light is not the laser. That's just a light that you're supposed to focus on that while this ultraviolet laser is blasting your cornea away. And then once the flap comes down, you're usually given several different kinds of eye drops before you leave. A moisturizing eye drop because after you get this process done, your eyes are going to have a little bit of difficulty generating the right kind of moisture to keep your eyes comfortable. So you're going to have to actually add eye drops in on a pretty regular basis. In fact, the first couple of days, it's like every hour you've got to add eye drops. And then as time goes on, you have to use them less and less frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife at this point rarely ever uses eye drops. But for the first year, she was using them on a fairly regular basis, although that schedule changed over time. Like after the first 3 months, it didn't need to be as frequent. And now it's rare when she needs them, but occasionally she does. And then you might also have antibiotic eye drops that you might have to add every now and then. And some places apparently give you a kind of gel that you put on the inside of your lower eyelid so that when you're asleep, it keeps your eye moisturized while you're sleeping. My wife, I don't remember her getting that. I should have asked her before I left the house this morning, but I do not recall her getting that kind of stuff. I do remember the other kinds of eye drops, though.
And then they, of course, schedule as, you know, a lot of surgical procedures. They also schedule regular appointments, even as soon as the next day.
Yeah, to make sure everything's healing
properly. And then gradually, as time goes on, you know, they check less frequently. You know, there'll be a year checkup, but, you know, it's one day and then they'll check the next week, the next month, increasingly longer periods just to make sure everything's healing the way it's supposed to, just to make sure that there are that your eyes are doing what they're supposed to do and you're not suffering any ill effects from the surgery. Because in the case of, there are times when the flap can get a wrinkle in it.
Yeah, I was wondering if we're going to get into that. Yeah, that can happen.
Things like that.
That can cause a little bit of blurry vision and may require a second surgical procedure.
Yay.
In order to get it straightened out. So,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Also, you know, there's a possibility that they may remove too little or too much of the cornea.
Yeah.
So they have to be.
Yeah, they have to be. That's why
they want to check.
That's why they're doing that whole long pre-op section so that they can determine that as precisely as possible to reduce that risk as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, again, this also depends a lot on the patient. You have to be able to lay there and be still while your eye is being held open and lasers are being shot into it after someone's cut a flap in it. It's a bit of a challenge for some of us. Let's talk really quickly about some of the other kinds of laser eye surgery besides LASIK.
Okay.
One of the precursors to LASIK, and it's still in use in a lot of places, is PRK laser eye surgery, or photorefractive keratectomy. Wow, I didn't know I was going to be able to say that. In this one, they actually scrape away the outermost layer of the cornea with the laser and then reshape the tissue on the underlying surface of the cornea. And then you have to allow the protective layer that was scraped off to grow back. So there's actually a longer healing period with PRK than with LASIK.
Mm-hmm. They can use that process to work on nearsightedness and astigmatism at the same time, however,
yep.
Which is nice.
Yep. And then there's LASIK with an E. The LASIK we're talking about is with an I.
Mm-hmm.
But LASIK is a slightly more advanced version of PRK that uses alcohol in solution to soften and then remove the epithelium, which is that protective layer, that outermost layer of the cornea.
Yeah, LASIK is laser epithelial keratotomyelitis.
Yeah.
I think I didn't mangle that terribly.
Yep. And then there's epi-LASIK, which is the modified version of that that uses a separator so that the because in the traditional LASIK, you're actually removing the epithelium entirely. And epi-LASIK, you're creating a separator so that you preserve that epithelium and then replace it on the eye. So it's like you take the cover off, fiddle around a bit, and put the cover back on. That's probably, I bet the eye surgeons out there just love me for saying that.
Mm.
There's LTK, or laser thermokeratoplasty.
Mm. That sounds like fun.
It's used mainly for farsightedness and astigmatism. And in this case, they actually are using heat. They're using the heat of a laser beam to shrink and reshape the cornea rather than removing it. So they're actually reshaping it. They're pushing the stuff around as opposed to cutting it away. And it's supposedly a much faster healing process than most other kinds of corrective surgery. And it's generally considered to be less invasive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting approach. There's also there's a custom view LASIK, conventional intra-LASIK, custom view intra-LASIK. These are all variations on the basic LASIK approach.
Mm-hmm.
Basic LASIK.
And there are, of course, complications with some of these. We mentioned some before. I've known people to undergo LASIK and complain of some problems with night vision where they see halos.
Yeah, there's a lot of that where
everyone looks like Master Chief.
No.
No. Basically, when you look at a light source, it looks like it has
a ring of
shimmering
light behind it.
Circle around it.
Yeah, yeah. Especially things for, like, if you're driving at night and you'll notice halos around headlights.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Or you're sensitive to bright light.
Yeah. Yeah, your light sensitivity, especially for the first few days, it's probably going to be a little rough. But for some people, it stays that way. So, like, my wife, she wears sunglasses a lot more frequently than she used to.
Mm-hmm. And for some people, too, I've heard that in some cases, it is possible for your eyes basically to slowly regress to where they were before. I don't know exactly why that is. You know, I've read reports that it happens. But some people who have, enjoyed the benefits of the surgery for years, and then there are others who gradually return to the way they were before.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it probably, since part of the cornea has been removed, I would imagine that it's probably not as drastic a change as it was. But I've read that can happen.
I would imagine if you have some sort of condition that continues to change the shape of your eyeball, that would be a big problem. Because the focal point would constantly be changing then, or gradually be changing.
Yes.
Well, I think that wraps up this discussion about laser eye surgery, which it was interesting. I mean, it's an interesting concept. It's also, I agree, it's a little squirmy. You know, I don't like the whole idea of people messing with my eyeballs.
Well, not a lot of people fall into that category, and it's not just us.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I have heard very positive things about these eye surgeries.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's something that sounds good to you, now you know a little bit more about how it works.
Yep. And here's the other thing that's kind of cool. Again, if you go to a reputable clinic, they're going to actually explain how this works to you in very simple terms, because they want to make sure that, you know, part of being an ideal candidate is being the kind of candidate that's not going to freak out when you're on the table.
That rules me out.
Darn tootin'. All right, guys. Well, if you have any anything you would like us to talk about, any topics you think would be particularly interesting, you can let us know. Shoot us an email. That address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Or you can let us know on Twitter and Facebook. Our handle there is techstuffhsw. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's brand new Season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.